Hello, and welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner, and happy to have you back this week for another great guest interview. Today, we're talking with Dr. Jolene Brighton, who's a naturopath in the Oakland Bay Area. And how did I even find? I think I just kind of just discovered you somehow on social media, and I was checking you out, and I thought, oh, I like this girl. I like what she's talking about. I like her style. So, thanks for coming on and joining our community, Jolene.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bridget. I think it might have been Twitter that we actually found each other on. I think I posted probably one of my rants about how we're not taking care of women well enough in the medical model, and I think you popped up and you were like, "Hey, we should connect." And and even before we did this podcast, we had a great conversation. And I was like, I really like what you do too. I like your style.
Yeah, you can get a sense sometimes even online, like, yeah, that person's, we'd get along. So that's awesome. And I believe you went to school in my neck of the woods. You went to NCNM here in Portland to study naturopathy.
Yes, I did. I lived in Portland for several years before moving to the Bay. I actually still have a house there, so I go up there quite a bit. Everyone who knows me knows I love Portland. I think Portland still has my heart.
Yeah, the Bay Area is pretty rad too.
Yes, it definitely is. But I mean, not enough food carts here. Just not enough food carts.
Maybe there's some regulations or something. Who knows? So you're a naturopath and you do holistic pelvic care. I was looking through your website. You do hormone replacement therapy. You do fertility and postpartum, which is some of which we'll talk about today. I think you work with women, obviously. You work with children a little bit too.
Yes, I do. I don't do so much like well child screening exams, but I work more with children who have chronic issues. A lot of gastrointestinal issues come into my office. So my work with children is a little more specialized. And I see, you know, a big part of it is because I'm so big about supporting moms, but you know, as having a child who can't eat food or has food sensitivities or eczema, things like that, it becomes a drain on mom and on the family as a whole. So it's something that I feel like is a really important piece in my mission of supporting moms, is that I also have to empower them to be able to care for their children and when their children have special needs, to make sure that they have the tools and the resources to have a healthy, happy family.
Yeah, and I can imagine if you've got a child with a lot of needs, whether they're behavioral, dietary, if you can kind of get in a rhythm where their symptoms are controlled and you know how to cook, then your life's a lot easier.
Definitely. And I think, being a mom doesn't come with a user manual. Every child, it would be great if they were born with their own user manual, because every child's so different. But I think that there's a lot of ways that moms get disempowered as far as what they can do to take care of their child. And there's a lot of really simple, basic, natural approaches that you can always employ first. And sometimes that does the trick. And if a mom can really be empowered and feel like she can care for her child, I just see that the whole family flourishes so much more. That's a little bit about how I work with children.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling like maybe someday we'll have you back on to talk about that topic, because I'm learning, you know, a good number of my listeners do have little kids actually, and I'm kind of shifting into thinking, how can I support that more? But today we are going to talk about something close to your heart. So you've got a 2.5-year-old little guy, and you had a lot of postpartum difficulties. You want to tell us about that journey and what you discovered?
Yeah, so I had my son in about 2012, and you know, we all go through that period, those 2 weeks of all your hormones shifting, and I unfortunately was also in a car accident at 2 months postpartum, and I was starting to have a little bit of anxiety, and there was a lot of shifts happening that didn't feel right, and then I went through a car accident, and following that, I started to have a decline in milk supply, which everyone was telling me, oh, well, that just is due to the fact that you had a really stressful event, which may have been true. I started moving through all the normal postpartum symptoms that you have, but my symptoms, they stayed with me. And so what I started to experience, I was reaching the year mark and I was still really, really fatigued, like really had a hard time getting out of bed. My hair was falling out. I had lost all my baby weight and then it was all coming back and coming back quickly, no matter what I did. I had a lot of joint pain. I had a lot of brain fog and symptoms you couldn't really explain. And then I remember one day waking up and just feeling this really low mood, like a depression. And it wasn't something I was looking at. I'm like, I love my practice. I love my life. Everything is great. And I have no reason to feel this way inside. Something chemically feels off. And, you know, through my journey, I went to many doctors. I always held this idea that as a doctor, I shouldn't doctor myself. And I still feel like it's good to have the checks and balance, someone on the outside perspective who can help give you some insight. But I was frustrated because I kept getting told that this is just part of being mom. This is just the way it goes. Of course you're tired. Of course these things are happening. But inside I was like, nothing, something's not right. And I took it upon myself and started ordering labs and started digging deeper. And lo and behold, I was hypothyroid. And I remember this aha moment. I fell asleep at the kitchen table with my son. Which was, I know, it sounds crazy, but he was crying and my husband came out. My husband said, something's not right. And nobody, you know, nobody's helping you. And you've been to several doctors and it's, you're a good doctor. Just, you know, do something about this. And it was this really wake up moment where I like sat up and I was like, wait a minute. And I just kind of put it all together. And I was like, I treat this every day. And yet, you know, I didn't even see it for myself. And part of it is because I was a mom and I was running my practice is really full and really busy. And I'm grateful for that because I love it. But I was working 10 to 12 hour days and then having to sleep 15 hours. There just wasn't time for everything I needed to do. But when I talk about this with patients, when you are examining your health, it's like having a book right up against your face and you can't really see the words. You can't read it. And it's, you need to have somebody that can pull that book back and that, you know, is standing back and can read the words and tell you, okay, this is what's happening. And for me, it was the moment when my husband was like, something's going on. And I sat up and I just was like, I just put it all together. And I was like, I am hypothyroid. Like that is what's going on. And all of these symptoms that I have going on, these are definitely postpartum thyroiditis symptoms. And that's really where I took charge of my health and really catapulted me into what the work I do with postpartum women. Even before I had my practice here in California, I was working in a pediatrician's office with a close friend of mine who's been a pediatrician for 25 years. And it was something that every time there was a mom in the room, of course, there was a mom in the room most of the time during these well-child visits, but she would have all these questions and he would have no answers. And he would leave the room and be like, you should talk to Dr. Brayton. Like, you should talk to Dr. Brayton about this. And so I would talk with the moms about this. And I realized, like, really early on before I even had my child, what a disconnect we have in our society that once mom gets her 6-week checkup, like, that's it. 6 weeks postpartum, for people who haven't had a baby, that's, you get checked out at 6 weeks postpartum to make sure you're healing. There's no signs of infection. You get the clearance. You can exercise and have sex. But there's nothing else in between. And there's all these well-child exams, which mom is at these well-child exams trying to ask the pediatrician some of these, you know, troubleshooting ideas. And the support just really isn't there. And that's when I decided I want to help these moms because I can see the moms who are getting support, their children are thriving. Like, there's a difference here. And if we're going to take care of children, it starts with mom. And that's got to be the starting point. So, I mean, that's a little bit about my story. I don't want to take up time talking so much about that, but it's just I've been there. And even as a doctor, I had other doctors that were supposed to be caring for me telling me that nothing was wrong. It's kind of a scary position to be in as a mom, hearing nothing's wrong, but you know, deep inside something's not right.
Mm. Yeah, and I think I shared with you when we talked a few weeks ago that I had a really difficult postpartum time too, with depression and just a lot of emotions. And it's a tough time too because you're so dang busy, obviously. Oh, yeah. So you don't feel like you have a lot of time for appointments. You're isolated often. You know, that's how I felt. You know, I just totally in love with my baby, but I was a first-time mom. I didn't even hardly know how to leave the house, and yeah, I wasn't feeling great. And I think, you know, we've had some other people talk about thyroid on the show. Thyroid is a very underdiagnosed or easily missed condition, would you say?
Oh, definitely. And a lot of that, I think, stems from, so conventionally, they really uphold the TSH. So the TSH is the main marker that's screened. That's what the brain says to the thyroid. And why I think it goes missed is, well, there's a couple reasons. So firstly, TSH is only one piece of the puzzle, and we need to make sure that we're looking at, well, I want to see what your brain says to the thyroid. I want to see how your thyroid responds. It produces mostly T4, a little bit of T3, but the main conversion of T3 is happening in the liver and the gut. So T3 is your active hormone. T4 is more like a pro hormone, so you have to be able to convert it. There's a lot of hiccups that can take place in that whole process. In the postpartum, the pituitary's got to come back online. It's got a lot of work to do, and that's what's secreting your TSH. So sometimes you're not getting the signal from the brain, or you are getting the signal, but your thyroid's not responding. Or thyroid is responding, and a condition I see in my practice quite often because I check for it is actually low T3 syndrome. And that can be because of there being an underlying infection. It can be from lots of stress, but it also can be that you're just lacking the nutrients and the ability to convert to your T3. Or maybe you have something going on with your liver, or you have gut dysbiosis, leaky gut. There's a lot of things that can go on the gut, and you're not converting things the way that you should. So there's a lot you got to look at. And then, of course, thyroid antibodies, because we know it's estimated that over 90% of hypothyroidism in this country is due to Hashimoto's, or having an autoimmune condition, so elevated anti-TPO and anti-thyroglobulin antibodies. But the other issue that takes place, why I think that hypothyroidism gets missed, is that conventionally, they really value the TSH, and they don't go beyond that. And the range for TSH is so broad. And so they'll let you go up to 5 on your TSH before they ever consider that there's an issue. In my practice, and I'm a really big advocate, that while labs are important, a patient's story and their symptoms are equally as important, if sometimes not more so. Because when we take blood, we're taking one snapshot in time. But that patient is living in their body every day, and they know their experience. And just to back up, something I want to note about the TSH range, everybody talks about the range needs to be, it needs to be much more narrow. And in a functional medicine, naturopathic medicine perspective, we do keep a more narrow range. But something that's interesting is that the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists actually call for medicating a woman with the T4, so synthroid, if her TSH is at 2.5 or above and she wishes to become pregnant or is pregnant. And the reason for that is because of the risks that are involved with being hypothyroid to baby, not to mention to mom. So I just find it really interesting that we'll let a woman, I won't, but, conventionally they think it's okay to let a woman, her TSH to rise, and for all of the everything to get really out of balance, so long as she's not wishing to become pregnant, hasn't had miscarriages, or isn't currently pregnant. And that, I think, is a real disconnect. So, they're being conservative with medication, which is always wise that we be conservative, but that doesn't mean we don't need to start some form of treatment to rebalance the body when you see that TSH rising. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there's maybe a couple things we can explain a little bit more for people, and then we'll move on into the spectrum. So sometimes I get excited, I forget to introduce what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about autoimmune thyroid from preconception through postpartum. So I'm going to ask you to explain a few more things you just went into, and then we'll kind of take a step back to preconception. So you talked about conversion of T4, which is the non-active or less active thyroid hormone, to T3, which is the active form. Can you talk about where that happens and why, like, something like high cortisol or micronutrient deficiency or a problem with the liver type of thing that you mentioned would be a problem? How does that all work?
So the majority of conversion is happening in the liver. And if we just think about what the liver's job is, I mean, it's a big detoxifier. Pretty much, I remember going back to my nutrition undergrad and my professor saying, if there's any question and you're not sure of the answer of like, where does this take place? Just go for the liver. Just go for the liver, because it has such a big, crucial job in our body. And it's, you know, part of its job is to convert thyroid hormone, but it's also dealing with all of the toxins in our environment, doing detoxification. It also is what's helping with our hormones overall. So if a woman's been on birth control pills or even bioidentical hormones, estrogen therapy being, you know, one that most people bring to their mind, like that's bogging down the liver as well. And so the liver is doing part of the conversion, but we also see conversion happening in the gut. And we know, I mean, I'm sure in your practice, and it holds true in mine, that a lot of people have issues with their gut. And that can go to our food supply. Definitely, we don't always – here's the thing. I don't want to say anything that makes anyone feel guilty about the way they eat, because as a consumer in this country, I think it's incredibly hard to navigate our food system. Incredibly hard, because even when you – so maybe you found a product and you think like, oh, this is a good product, and I've read every – like this food item, you've read the label. I mean, that could change in a few months, and they could be putting things in there that are actually harmful. So, you know, it's one of those things. Our food supply isn't so clean. We may have contracted food poisoning at some point, which we know can lend itself to small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or IBS. There tends to be a lot of antibiotics given out. It's becoming less of a trend and people are more aware of it. But I mean, back when I was a child, it was like, you just get antibiotics. That's just what you do. And we know that affects our gut flora. And even going even further back to when you're born, that can, you know, what's in mom's gut affects what's in baby's gut, but also babies born via C-section or not breastfed. I mean, the new research on the microbiome is really fascinating, that we can have disruption in our gut from day one. So there's a lot of things that can happen in the gut. And it, in the gut, yeah, we're having conversion, but it's also the way we absorb our nutrients. And if you, let's say you have something like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or SIBO, you're not going to absorb your nutrients as easily. For thyroid health, we need things like zinc and selenium, B12, iron, all of these things that also impact fertility. If you don't have adequate hydrochloric acid, or you don't have a good absorption rate in your gut because bacteria or something else is underlying that, then you're not going to have the nutrients you need to make the thyroid conversion, but also you've got this disharmony in your gut. And since you mentioned we're going to talk about autoimmunity, we know that leaky gut, and I think that's it's a pretty big buzzword, so a lot of people are familiar with it, but I'll still, you know, describe it a little bit. What I like to say is it's to patients is basically, if you think, right now I'm gesturing with my hands, I'm like, this doesn't work so well. but your cells, they should be tight, bumped up right next to each other. And if they get inflamed, and let's say, I mean, a lot of things can contribute to leaky gut. You can have a really stressful event. You might be taking a non-steroidal anti-inflammatories for chronic pain, or maybe you have an underlying infection. And these cells will actually start to separate, and then little proteins get through. Now, those can be food particles, they can be bacteria, yeast, you know, anything that's coming into the gut. Your immune system, which is very wise, and I think it's something that we really, a lot of times when we start talking about autoimmunity, I hear a lot of practitioners being like, your immune system's doing a bad job, and your body is really wise. It sees these proteins as non-self, and it grabs onto them. As it should. That's a good thing. However, because these molecules look enough like some of your other tissues, so for example, gluten, the protein, the sequence in there looks enough like the thyroid, your body can get confused and start attacking your thyroid. So that's another way that, you know, the gut can really be involved with what's happening in autoimmunity. And that's not to say that everybody with leaky gut is going to develop autoimmunity. We know you also have to have the genes for it. And if you don't have those genetic markers, leaky gut may not lead to autoimmunity, but it can certainly lead to other more chronic conditions. And it's problematic, especially if you are pregnant or you're breastfeeding, your nutrient requirement is much higher. And unfortunately, many women actually enter into pregnancy already nutrient depleted. They don't have enough of those nutrients. So that just puts you at more of a deficit, which, you know, as you were talking about, and I just really want to honor that you saying that you had postpartum depression, because it's really common and it's not really talked about. And there's a lot of shame and stigma in our society around things that are, you know, termed just mental health disorders. What's going on, and we know more and more from the research every day, what's going on with your mental health, it's not just about the brain, it's about the entire system and the entire body. And so I don't really think there's any shame in that. I think that when you do suffer from postpartum depression, that's your body signaling, like, something's really not right. And sometimes it's you know, we need to reexamine our life, because maybe you went back to work and that's not working for you. But a lot of times it can come down to, there's inflammation, maybe there's thyroid imbalance, there's a lot of other things that can be taking place. And it's an opportunity to see that there's something else going on. And as clinicians, we need to work it up. We need to respect those symptoms, and we need to dig deeper to find out what's going on. But I think talking about this, especially talking about our own experiences, you know, as clinicians, but also as women, is really, it's really powerful, and it's really empowering to other women to know that you're not alone, and there's nothing wrong with you for going through this. Like, that your body has a lot of demands, and in our society, women are just not supported in the ways that they should be, in general, but especially after having a baby.
Yeah. And I think on one level, you know, in our culture, when you're pregnant or when you have a new baby, everyone's just like, oh, that's so awesome, you must be so happy. And you kind of just feel like, you know, oh yeah, you know, so you feel like sometimes you can't say, you know, actually I'm having a hard time here, or, you know, you're pregnant and you're puking every 6 hours. Like, yeah. People don't want to hear that. They want to hear, you know, it's exciting, and it is exciting on a lot of levels, but yeah. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that we're starting to develop a new dysfunction in our society, and that's of gratitude, where gratitude's becoming, like, it's becoming pathological in a sense, in that people are like, you should be grateful. You should be grateful. Yeah, you should be grateful. And there's a lot of power in a gratitude practice, but it's okay to say right now, I ain't happy, and that's okay. And you need to be heard. And if it goes on for a period of time, being a mom, you're a mom. I admit to my patients all the time that, you know, I have days where I'm like, why did I do this? This is the hardest thing in the world. And then, you know, the way children are, they know. And like 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, I'm so happy. This is the best thing that's ever happened. Like, there's a lot of ups and downs, but it's when it becomes that feeling every day of like, every day, this is so difficult. And I don't know, you know, I'm not really up for the challenges of being a mom. Then that becomes, you know, problematic, and that needs to be explored. But you're absolutely right. People, the expectations that are put on moms, some of it's just really subtle too, where people are like, you must be so happy you have this new baby. And you're like, I haven't showered in like a week and a half. Like, I don't even remember, did I brush my teeth today? Like, it's really hard. And our brains are really good about forgetting about it. I think I 2.5 years, I actually wrote down everything in my early postpartum, because I was like, I never want to forget this experience, because it's a really unique experience. But also that I think biology is really smart in that it's like, let's just have mom forget this, because that's how we'll get you to procreate again.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, even getting ready for this podcast, I was thinking about back to my own postpartum, and I never really got like an official diagnosis. And frankly, luckily with, you know, a help of nutrition and coaching, I kind of clawed my way out of that whole situation. But I never really wanted to go back and reflect on it, kind of, because it was a hard time. But yeah. Also, you know, now as I'm learning, I do think, well, what could have been different before I conceived? You know, how was my health compromised, you know, before I became pregnant, that type of thing. And there are some things that if I knew then what I know now, about my gut and some nutritional mistakes I was making, probably would have put me in a better place postpartum. So, you know, one thing I never really checked, and that you're encouraging women to check, is before conception to have a thyroid screening. So tell us more about why that's important and what needs to be screened.
Yes. So I talked a little bit about what needs to be screened, but let me just run through it again. So definitely TSH, free T3, free T4. I also like to look at the total T3 and total T4 the first time I'm seeing people. I like to look at reverse T3. So that, we haven't talked about that. You can convert T4 into T3, or it can go into reverse T3. I call reverse T3 kind of like the hibernation hormone, because it basically makes you want to just go to bed. And it's not even that it makes you want to do these things, but when you've got more of it, you want to go to bed and your body gains weight because you don't have the active thyroid hormone. I also like to look at anti-thyroglobulin antibody and anti-TPO antibody. And why it's important to look at all of these thyroid markers is because if you have elevated TSH, or if there's anywhere in the system where things are getting off in terms of thyroid health, you're at an increased risk of miscarriage. And from the conventional perspective, they don't really work up a woman until she's had 3 miscarriages. That's kind of the standard. And miscarriages are incredibly painful for women. And it's something that I think we don't really talk about, is that I remember back when I was learning about miscarriages, and it was like, when it happens, it's going to be like the worst period a woman's ever had. And you know, not a whole lot was talked about that. But there's a lot of grief. There's a lot that takes a toll on a woman. And so when I have a woman that comes to me and she's had 1 miscarriage, I'm looking into why. And the other reason is because we know that some of these things that could, you know, relate to a miscarriage, like thyroid dysfunction or maybe MTHFR status, they can actually contribute to chronic disease in a woman's life. So it's important to work up on that level as well. But so there's the increased risk of miscarriage, and we also know that the fetus, so the baby, doesn't actually make thyroid hormone until about 12 weeks in utero. So they're really dependent on mom's overall thyroid health. And that's really important, because there's been studies to show that if mom didn't have adequate thyroid hormone, that baby actually has impaired intellectual and psychomotor development. So they actually have issues cognitively in meeting their milestones because of having that inadequate thyroid. And other risks, I mean, so there's the miscarriage. And I should also note that with the thyroid antibodies, that even if your TSH, even if all the thyroid hormones look normal, having thyroid antibodies themselves can be a risk, that when TSH is normal, TPO positive women actually have a higher rate of miscarriage. So even if your thyroid looks fine, it's important to address the underlying causes and try to basically look. I don't know. I wouldn't say focus so much on like get the antibodies down as much as focus on the underlying cause and optimizing your health. But what's also important is, so let's say so you make it past the golden 12 weeks for everybody that's out there. The risk of miscarriage is higher in the first trimester. So that's usually why you don't know your friends are pregnant until they're in their second trimester. They'll till it's later on, because that's when we tend to share those things. But so even if you don't have adequate thyroid hormone, even if you haven't had a miscarriage, but you go through pregnancy with that inadequate thyroid hormone, we talked a little bit about what can happen to baby mentally, but baby can also have a lower birth weight. Mom is at risk of having high blood pressure. Mom's also at risk of postpartum hemorrhage. And then we also know that women who have been found to be positive for TPO antibodies in early pregnancy, they have anywhere, what the research has shown, is about 30 to 50% increased risk of developing postpartum thyroiditis. So I should back up and talk a little bit about what happens. Would it be helpful for me to talk about what happens with the immune system in pregnancy?
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting topic. Go for it.
Okay. All right. So often people will say your immune system gets shut down in pregnancy. pregnancy. And that's not actually correct. So what happens is that we shift. There's two aspects of the immune system. Now, this is definitely an oversimplification. But if you think about it, there's the Th1, which is where we really fight viruses and bacteria. And that's where most autoimmunity is driven, is through the Th1. And then you have your Th2. And your Th2 is, you know, it's good for parasites, but not a whole lot of people are getting those in this country. But it's also where we see asthma, allergies, eczema arising from. But what happens in pregnancy, because you need to have immune tolerance to your baby. Now, remember I said earlier, your immune system's smart. If something isn't you, if the proteins aren't you, then your body's going to attack that. We don't want body to attack baby. Baby's not you. Baby's genetically unique. So what happens is your body, being wise, shifts from being from having this Th1 elevated to bringing down Th1 and bringing up Th2. So why is it really important to get screened early on before conception? Is because if you're not screened in early, so if you're not screened before you get pregnant, or in that first trimester, you may miss these thyroid antibodies, because as your immune system shifts, you'll see that you have more immune tolerance for baby, but also the autoimmunity is downregulated. Now, I should say, there are a fraction of people, a small percentage, who actually have Th2-driven Hashimoto's or autoimmune thyroid, so it's possible that this doesn't happen for them. But most women, we see the Th1 comes down, the antibodies come down. So if you didn't catch it early on, you don't know what things might be like in postpartum. So if we can catch it early on and we see that you had TPO antibodies, we know that when you deliver, and when you deliver, you lose your placenta, your hormones drop rapidly, and then your immune system comes back online. And that's the time where we can see that, I mean, we know why women, part of why women are much more prone to autoimmunity is because of all the hormone shifts. But in that time, that's when we can see the autoimmunity rises back up. If I know a woman has TPO antibodies before she gets pregnant, I definitely do everything I can to work with her to optimize her immune system health, her body overall, before moving into pregnancy. And so we also lower the risk of miscarriage. But we put together a postpartum plan that is focusing in on how do we regulate this postpartum thyroiditis. There's a higher risk in that, but it's important to note that the statistics are, so I should back up. There's a higher risk if you already have those TPO antibodies early on that you're going to develop it. Postpartum thyroiditis, which is autoimmunity in the postpartum period. But I should back up and say that we, you know, in this country, we're not screening everybody, but we know there's about one in 17 women will experience postpartum thyroiditis. And that's only the women that we're actually screening. I'm going into a lot of depth here. Is there anything we should clarify? Any questions you have? I just want to make sure I'm making sense.
Yeah, let's just sum up. It's important to know before we try to get pregnant, are we autoimmune or not? Because we know that, or are we low thyroid or not? Because you said 90% of the cases will be autoimmune, 10% are just maybe low thyroid. If you're positive for some irregularities there. So then if you do become pregnant, hopefully we're pre-treating to prevent miscarriage, but, with good treatment to support the body. And then we're checking our thyroid markers again in early pregnancy because they'll shift. So we want to have that baseline before we go into pregnancy. Is that right so far?
Yes. Okay, absolutely. Great. Yeah. And if I know women have had, these TPO antibodies and low functioning thyroid, like I monitor them throughout pregnancy. Now, I'm not the one delivering baby, so they work with an OB or a midwife, whoever they choose to deliver their baby. And I work in conjunction with them. But most of the time, what my experience is that these doctors, midwives, most of the time they're like, okay, can you manage the thyroid and can you manage these other aspects of what's going on? Which is great to have a healthcare team that can work together and do that. But if I know a woman has these, they're already positive for these markers in some way, I like to retest them. And it's going to be anywhere from 6 weeks to 12 weeks postpartum. And I practice a really individualized style of medicine as you do. So it's not that, you know, I automatically am checking everything. And I should say I check a lot more than thyroid in women. So it's going to depend on, you know, how much blood loss was there and what are symptoms and what are things going on. But generally, when we see these thyroid antibodies, if you haven't had thyroid symptoms but you think you are having them in the postpartum period, we generally see that postpartum thyroiditis usually starts as hyperthyroid. So there will be, hey, I'm losing all my baby weight, which feels awesome, but you might also feel anxious. Maybe you're having difficulty sleeping. And then you'll switch and you'll go into more of the hypothyroid stage. So with hypothyroidism, I'm sure a lot of you said you've talked about thyroid on your podcast before, so I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with it, but it can be really tricky in a postpartum woman because fatigue comes along with being a mom. It's true, but this is different fatigue. This is like my baby is now sleeping more, but I am totally tired and it doesn't matter how much I sleep. And maybe hair loss. I mean, you lose your hair postpartum, but maybe it doesn't come back, or maybe it does, and then all of a sudden you're rapidly losing it again. We'll see cold intolerance being a major symptom, achy joints, holding baby and being like, oh, wow, my joints, all of them just hurt all the time. And I feel like even when I go up a flight of stairs, I'm just exhausted and I'm not recovering well. Something I should say is your adrenals get hit pretty hard as a mom. Every mom out there knows. And so a lot of these symptoms can be, they can be adrenal exhaustion or fatigue. So it's really important, just because I'm on this podcast talking about thyroid today doesn't mean that you shouldn't be looked at as a whole person. And so it's, and to also say that you shouldn't, if somebody's like, oh, well, that's just adrenal fatigue, you should still work up your thyroid. You should have a thorough workup and look at other factors. Something we talked about with postpartum depression, just having low iron status and not getting oxygen to the brain can really affect mom's mood. And she may be having brain fog, and maybe it's not thyroid, maybe it's not adrenal, maybe it's just nutrient status. So even though I'm on here talking about thyroid and that's our focus today, I just really want women to know that it's not one size fits all, and you should work with a practitioner who looks at you as a whole person and make sure that they're ruling out anything that could be contributing to your symptoms.
So your type of postpartum thyroiditis, it was an autoimmune type?
Yes. Okay. So the what was interesting is that I didn't get checked early on. I didn't get checked until much later. So my thyroid antibodies, I just think back to like, what would my thyroid antibodies had looked like if I had been checked early on, if I had been screened for this. But the other thing is that, you know, I know as far as nutrition, making sure that I was getting sunshine and, you know, checking my vitamin D status. Vitamin D plays a really big role in our immune system. Research has shown that many moms are deficient in vitamin D, which impacts baby's health as well. So it's really important, and so it's really important to get your vitamin D checked and to supplement wisely. Because I want to say that a lot of times people have this misconception that just because something is natural therapy, so oh, it's an herb, it must be safe. That's not true. Vitamin D, you can have toxicity from it. And a lot of these, I just say this because sometimes I'm on a lot of mom forums, and sometimes I'll see things about like a mom's in her first trimester and she's, you know, having a lot of nausea, and women will be like, oh, try this herb, try this, try that. And actually we got to be really cautious in that first trimester. But also, just because something's natural doesn't mean that it's safe, and you need to work with a qualified healthcare practitioner to help you navigate that. And I know patients, they start to feel desperate when they're not getting the help that they need, and they want to take things into their own hands, which is why how I work in my practice is to empower my patients to be able to do so that they're knowledgeable about it, but they also know what we need to be cautious about. So although I'm saying, oh, vitamin D is great for balancing the immune system, you also have to have your levels checked. In my personal case, that I have a whole history of gut symptoms that started from when I was a child that I've worked to correct, and things have gotten better, but you know, when you are pregnant, your gut really slows down and your immune system's down. You can become susceptible to, you know, pathogens, things of those nature. But what I found is that in the postpartum period, I actually had, so there was a little bit of like digestion issues, which I was able to manage well. But my son, he had a lot of allergies. So I actually wanted to comment on how you were saying, oh, well, if I would have known now what I, known then what I know now, how I would have done things differently. But what's interesting is that, you know, I prepped my body postpartum or pre-pregnancy for a year. And when I had my son, I, you know, was doing just about everything right, but he still developed allergies. Turns out it was something in our ducts in our house, but it was a lot of work to figure out what was going on. And things that I was eating was actually, they would contribute to that. And I went on a full autoimmune paleo diet, and I was really limited in what I was eating. And it was a real struggle. And my absorption wasn't so great. And when I look back at everything that happened, like, I was under a lot of stress. I went back to work at 6 weeks postpartum. For everyone listening, I don't recommend that. You should not do that. I worked with a lot of moms, and when I, you know, they were contacting me being like, oh, I really need to see you, I had a really soft spot in my heart for them, and I love what I do for work. So I went back, but it was really stressful, and there was a lot of stress going on in my life, and there was just a lot of factors that I feel were impacting my digestion. And so when I had my blood work done, my ferritin levels were actually quite low. There were other things going on that I was like, huh, even though I was taking a prenatal, even though I was doing these things, like, it's just to illustrate that so I was doing a lot of things right, that if I hadn't been doing them, I think things would have been a lot worse. But you can still do everything right. But if you don't have someone helping you, and you don't have someone, it's really hard. So for moms, to credit them, your brain shrinks. It's estimated about 8% by the third trimester. And when you don't really start recovery from that till like six months postpartum that you start to get that back. So it's really hard to see the forest for the trees and to be in the thick of that. So it's really, if you can have someone helping you, and that's where I really see that, you know, my work comes in, is to help moms navigate this. But just to say, you can do everything right and life still happens. Life still happens. I was in a car accident. That was really stressful. And that was definitely, you know, was it a triggering event? It was definitely a triggering event, because that was really high stress and I was really scared. And then I was in a lot of pain for a long time. Yeah, so even you, like, can do everything right.
Yeah, and even that kind of thing can kind of trigger on autoimmunity too, right? Like a stressful event, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So if it wasn't going to be the postpartum that got me, that car accident, I mean, a guy just decided to just change lanes right into the side of my car without looking. He was really sweet and apologetic, but it also left me in a state where I had difficulty holding my baby because I was in so much pain. And knowing what I know, I was like, I'm not taking painkillers, and I'm not taking anything because I'm breastfeeding and I don't want to wreck my gut. Like, there was just things that I knew, but I was able to work with a healthcare practitioner. She's actually in the Portland area. Dr. Tina Moore is amazing for any kind of chronic musculoskeletal pain. And she got me my life back, like, in that aspect. And then I had to work deeper on, you know, the thyroid, the adrenal, and everything else that was going on. But I just really want to drive home the point that moms, we got enough guilt, and you can do everything right, and it's still may not be enough, because you don't always have the knowledge. And even if you do, it's hard to see what's going on, because your brain, as it should be, is hyper focused on taking care of baby and really focused in on, like, what your task is.
Yeah. And this is, I'd like to just kind of like rapid fire a lot of suggestions now. And so I'll recap some we talked about, which is, it's important to have support after baby, because you're not thinking clearly, and, you know, you're going through a lot physically and just with the change in your life. So I think just getting your support team going, don't be shy to ask for help, is important. You mentioned vitamin D, but only after checking. good for autoimmunity and just general health. I know you talked a little bit about autoimmune paleo diet. Do you want to talk a little bit more about nutritional things that we could do if, say, we know we're autoimmune thyroid, or even maybe we're just trying to prevent it?
Yeah, so I should say that I don't necessarily recommend autoimmune paleo in the early postpartum. You're starving, you've got a lot going on, it's a lot to tackle, and some postpartum thyroiditis will go into remission. So I will use autoimmune paleo in my patients when it's been 6 months to a year and those antibodies are still staying up, and we've been working on other stuff. But if you're someone who has had if you're not breastfeeding, early breastfeeding, or pregnant right now, adopting like a paleo style diet, but can be really helpful. But also looking at food sensitivity. So if you have autoimmune thyroid, you've ever had antibodies, gluten can never come back into your life. And I am like there. I really love eating, and I don't like taking foods away from people. But this one, I'm hard and fast on. Foot is down because that gluten, if you react to it, I mean, we're talking like 6 months of destruction can be taking place, and inflammation in your body. And inflammation is really the underpinnings of so many chronic diseases. So I definitely have my patients take out gluten. Dairy, most autoimmune thyroid patients have to take out dairy. It's very few that can tolerate it. And then we have to look at very individualized. Eggs, I see, can be really problematic for people. And that sometimes when people go paleo, they have a really egg-rich diet because they're like, well, I'm going to make everything. Like they start doing the like, well, I got to make muffins, and those are really egg-based, and pancakes. And then there's a lot of eggs and almond flour coming in a lot. So if you have leaky gut, you're going to start reacting to these foods. That's not to say you won't be able to get back to some of these other foods. Gluten and dairy, probably not. But some of these other foods, I definitely have patients who are able to go back on them. So you need to, if you've got leaky gut, you need to heal your gut. So my question is always, why do you have leaky gut? And we know, so why I bring this up, leaky gut is a big player in autoimmunity and how things are able to be, you know, get triggered, but also perpetuated. So healing up the gut, taking out food sensitivities, asking why do you have leaky gut? Do you have chronic stress? Are you in sympathetic overdrive? So you're always stressed out. You're not getting into the rest and digest, which is the parasympathetic activity of the nervous system, which if you can't get there, you can never really digest your food well and be able to optimize your nutrition in that way. But maybe you have an underlying infection. So small intestinal bacterial overgrowth that I mentioned. You may also have yeast overgrowth. There might be pathogenic bacteria in the colon that are causing inflammation throughout the gut. Maybe you have issues with hypochlorhydria, so low stomach acid higher up. You need to be checked for H. pylori or understand, you know, why is that? And, you know, a really easy trick for people to try is actually putting 1 to 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar into a bit of water and drinking that about 15 minutes before their meals. If that gets you feeling a lot better, chances are that you've had low stomach acid. It's a gentle way just to kind of stimulate your body to make good stomach acid. If you don't have adequate stomach acid, you can't liberate your B12, you can't liberate your minerals, especially iron. They become much harder to absorb. You also need that good stomach acid to signal to the rest of the digestive tract that you need to release pancreatic enzymes. And if you want to affect the gut, you have to kind of look at the top down. So addressing those things, I talked a little bit about the diet. So you want to take out things that are triggering, but you also want to, in a lot of instances, you need to get your nutrient status checked. We know selenium is really important in thyroid health overall, but in autoimmunity, 200 micrograms of selenium every day can be really beneficial to the thyroid. I like people to have a CBC checked. So we're looking for at your red blood cells, white blood cells. That's a blood marker, and it will tell us about anemia. So the other thing is I recommend ferritin testing as well, which is like your savings account or your storage form of iron. And if you're getting low in those, that's going to impact your thyroid. It also impacts your energy overall. So if you are pregnant or having a baby, you should definitely, or you've had a baby and you're breastfeeding, you should definitely stay on your prenatal. And I recommend prenatals that have high quality B vitamins in them. So I don't recommend folic acid because if you haven't been screened for MTHFR, which that's a whole topic for another day, but that's basically maybe the genes you were handed. You might not use that folic acid. It can make things worse. But your adrenals and your whole body and your brain, they really need those optimal B vitamins. So B vitamins are really important in your overall health. And you can get those in a good prenatal, which will also be giving you your iron. It will have some selenium in there. It'll have a lot of these really important nutrients. So I just want to say, too, in terms of adrenal health, we talked about the B vitamins. Magnesium is also important, but going like really basic on taking care of your overall hormonal health and managing your autoimmunity is making sure you're getting regular exercise. So even if that's actually, I shouldn't even say even if that's going for a walk, because I think walking is phenomenal. So great for your brain. It's working all these postural muscles. You're getting outside, you're getting sunshine, you're breathing fresh air. It's really great for, you know, your adrenals, for your thyroid conversion. So we talked about converting. You need adequate exercise. And then as you were talking about, making sure you have adequate support and taking time for yourself. Self-care takes discipline, and it's absolutely essential for you to be at your best. Whether you are a mom or not, you have to take care of yourself. Interestingly, oxytocin, which is that hormone that when you're breastfeeding and you're cuddling, that gets nice and high, it makes you feel all kinds of happiness and love. It responds, you get oxytocin from getting massages and body work as well, which I think is really great for everyone to do. And then, of course, you're an acupuncturist. We definitely have to acknowledge that acupuncture does so much in decreasing stress levels, in helping regulate autoimmunity. I like all of my patients to meet with an acupuncturist and have that work done as well. And the research on acupuncture and fertility is just, it's phenomenal. So, you know, that's some of the things. That was kind of long-winded. Did I cover everything you wanted me to cover?
Oh, I think that's great. And I think, you know, we talked about some things that definitely involve having a practitioner. You know, you can't run your own blood work in most cases. You know, if you're thinking maybe I should get my gut tested, you need help. So yeah, that's maybe a good segue. If someone's interested in working with you after hearing all this, how can they work with you?
So I see patients in my practice in Oakland, California, and then I also do consults via webcam or phone with people. So if you want me to be your doctor, the rule is you got to meet with me once a year in person, and then we can do remote. I have a lot of patients who are remote, but I do also have a lot of people who just want me to consult on their case and take a look at their labs and, you know, help them navigate the medical model so that they can have a conversation with their doctor and to know, you know, what are things that they should be looking at and what are some steps that they can take. So I can't necessarily be your doctor in that, but I do consult in a way that helps you not only be able to have conversations with your doctor, but be able to get the care you need and, more importantly, understand what's going on with your body, why it's taking place, and how you can take steps to correct that.
Okay, so you can do like a second opinion or a primary care if it's at least, you know, first time in person type of thing. And your website is Dr. Brighton, that's drbrighton.com. Any resources you want to share from your website?
Yeah, so we talked about the back at the beginning. We were talking about helping moms out, and I actually have an ebook that I actually wrote this book, and I was going to send it off to the land of Amazon, and then I decided just to make it free. Because it's basically the troubleshooting of like the top five things that come up for babies and children in general, like colic and basic colds and things that moms can do. And the way I wrote this book is so that moms can look at it from, okay, here's some things that I can do. These are the signs and symptoms. But also I put in there when it's time to call the doctor. So you can feel confident of, I think I hear this a lot from my patients. They're like, I didn't know if I should or shouldn't call you. And so I actually outlined that. And yeah, rather than charging for it, I wanted to get that information out there to moms and just really – I just really want them to have those tools. So there is a, I guess I can also send it to you and you can link in the show notes, but there is a free ebook on my website. And then I also have a free download for postpartum moms of just some of the things that you can do to really optimize your postpartum health and healing. And that's at my website, which I should clarify that my last name is Brighten. It's a little tricky. So it's drbrighten.com and it's /postpartum. So if your listeners are interested in picking up that, those are available to them as well.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, we'll share that link. And my instincts were right. I knew you'd be a good guest on the show. This is great. I think people love all the detailed information. And I know it was kind of a lot, but, you know, just gives people, you can always listen again. And yeah, just, you know, just gives you hopefully a jumping off point as listeners to, you know, where to go next, what to do next. So thank you again, Dr. Brighten. Maybe I can convince you to be back on to talk about some other fun things later.
Oh, definitely. I had a really good time talking to you today. I appreciate you reaching out to me and asking me to be on here. I want to say I really appreciate you clarifying everything because I'm kind of a nerd and I want people to have as much information as possible. And so it was really nice to have this conversation. And I think you did a wonderful job summarizing the things that I was conveying.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Yeah, I feel like that's my job. Nerd translator. Resident nerd translator. Yeah. Well, thank you for our listeners. We always appreciate you. We appreciate you sharing this episode. If someone you know could use, so please share as desired, and you can subscribe to the show on any podcast player. You can also rate us on iTunes. We appreciate that. And you can comment through iTunes, or you can also comment to me for show suggestions or anything else you want to share with me at my website, which is bridgetdanner.com. So hope you can join us next week for another wonderful guest. And until then, bye, everybody.